Lord Russell, what is philosophy?
Well, that's a very controversial question. I think no two philosophers will give you the same answer. My own view would be that philosophy consists of speculations about matters where exact knowledge is not yet possible. But that will only be my answer, not anybody else's.
What's the difference between philosophy and science?
Well, roughly you'd say science is what we know and philosophy is what we don't know. That's a simple definition. And for that reason, Christians are perpetually passing over from philosophy into science as knowledge advances.
When something is established and discovered, it ceases to be philosophy and becomes science.
Yes. And all sorts of questions that used to be labeled philosophy are no longer so labeled.
Well, what good is philosophy?
I think philosophy has two uses, really. One of them is to keep alive speculation about things that are not yet amenable to scientific knowledge. After all, scientific knowledge covers a very small part of the things that interest mankind and ought to interest them. There are a great many things of immense interest about which science, at present at any rate, has nothing to say. And I don't want people's imaginations to be limited and enclosed within what can be now known. And I think to enlarge your imaginative purview of the world into the hypothetical realm is one of the uses of philosophy. But there's another use which I think is equally important, which is to show that there are things we thought we knew and don't know. On the one hand, to keep us thinking about things that we may come to know, and on the other hand, to keep us modestly aware of how much that seemed like knowledge isn't knowledge.
Could you give some illustrations of the sorts of subjects which have been speculated about and then produce the material result later?
Yes, it's quite easy to do so, especially from Greek philosophy. The Greeks invented a whole lot of hypotheses which turned out valuable later, but which in their day couldn't be tested. Take, for example, the atomic hypothesis. Democritus invented the atomic hypothesis that matter consists of little atoms. And after about 2,000 years, and rather more than that, it turned out that this was the right scientific view. But in his day, it was merely a suggestion. Or take again Aristarchus. Aristarchus was the first person who suggested that the Earth went round the sun and not the sun round the Earth, and that the apparent revolution of the heavens every day was due to the Earth rotating. And that remained an almost buried and forgotten hypothesis until the time of Copernicus 2,000 years later. But Copernicus would probably never have thought of it if it hadn't been for Aristarchus.
How is this done? By some sort of intuition?
Oh, no, because the people who first think of these hypotheses can't say this is the truth. They can only say this may be the truth. And if you have a good scientific imagination, you can think of all sorts of things that might be true. And that's the essence of science. You first think of something that might be true, and then you look to see whether it is, and generally it isn't.
But didn't Plato think that Democritus oughtn't to be speculating in this way at all?
Oh, yes. Plato was horrified by him. He said all his books ought to be burnt, because Plato didn't like science. He liked mathematics, but he didn't like anything else that was scientific.
Now, in this way, philosophy, in a sense, becomes a kind of servant of science.
Well, that's part of it. But, of course, it isn't only a servant of science, because there are a number of things that science can't deal with. All questions of values, for example. Science won't tell you what is good and what is bad. Tell you what is good or bad as an end, not just as a means.
But what change has there been over the years in the attitude of philosophers and the public to philosophy, would you say?
Well, that depends upon the school of philosophy that you're thinking of. In Plato and in Aristotle, in both of them, the main thing was an attempt to understand the world. And that, I should say, personally, is what philosophy ought to be doing. But then you come on to the Stoics, and their emphasis was mainly on morality, that you ought to be stoical, you ought to endure misfortunes patiently. And that came to be the popular use of a philosopher.
Would you say that Marx was a philosopher?
Well, he was certainly in a sense a philosopher. But now there you have an important division among philosophers. There are some philosophers who exist to uphold the status quo, and others who exist to upset it. And Marx, of course, belongs to the second lot. But for my part, I should reject both those as being not the true business of a philosopher. And I should say the business of a philosopher is not to change the world, but to understand it, which is the exact opposite of what Marx said.
What kind of a philosopher would you say that you are?
Well, the only label I've ever given myself is logical atomist, but I'm not very keen on the label. I've rather avoided labels. It means, in my mind, that the way to get at the nature of any subject matter you're looking at is analysis. And that you can analyze until you get to things that can't be analyzed any further. And those would be logical atoms. I call them logical atoms because they're not little bits of matter. They're the, so to speak, ideas out of which a thing is built up.
What is the main trend of philosophy today?
In what I was saying a moment ago, it would appear that philosophy is merely incomplete science. And there are people who don't like that view. They want to have science have a sphere, philosophy have a sphere to itself. That has led them into what you may call linguistic philosophy. That the important thing for the philosopher is not to answer questions, but to get the meaning of the questions quite clear. I can't myself agree to that view, but I could give an illustration. I was once bicycling to Winchester, and I lost my way, and I went to a village shop, and I said, can you tell me the shortest way to Winchester? And the man I asked called to a man in a back region whom I couldn't see. Gentleman wants to know the shortest way to Winchester. And the voice came back, Winchester?
Aye.
Way to Winchester?
Aye.
Shortest way?
I don't know.
And so I had to go on without getting an answer. Well, that is what Oxford philosophy thinks one should do. The continental approach is, it's more full-blooded. I don't agree with it anymore, but in a sense it's much more full-blooded and much more like philosophies of earlier times. There are various kinds of the philosophy that comes from Kierkegaard, existentialism. And then there are philosophies designed to provide apologetics for traditional religion. There are various things of that sort. I don't think myself that there's anything very important in all that.
But now, what practical use is your sort of philosophy to a man who wants to know how to conduct himself?
Well, I find it useful because I get letters very often from people saying I'm completely perplexed, I don't know what to do, and I can't see a reason for doing this rather than that. Well, I say to these people, now, this world is not one in which certainty is possible. If you think you've achieved certainty, you're almost certainly mistaken. That's one of the few things you can be certain about. And therefore you have to learn to act upon something that you still more or less doubt. You have to learn to act on probability. After all, there's nothing very new about that. Suppose you're a general preparing a plan for a battle. You don't know exactly what the enemy will do. You guess. And if you're a good general, you guess right. If you're a bad general, you guess wrong. But one has, in practical life, to act upon probabilities.
And what I should look to philosophy to do is to encourage people to act with vigor, without complete certainty.
Yes, but now, how about this business, though, of making people so uncertain about things they'd sort of believe and have faith in? Doesn't that rather disturb them?
Well, it does for a time, of course. And I think a certain amount of disturbance is an essential part of mental training. But if they have any knowledge of science, they get a ballast which enables them to avoid being completely upset by the doubts that they ought to feel.
So what sort of future would you think that philosophy has got? I mean, is it going to run out?
Yes, I don't think philosophy can in the future have anything like the importance that it had either to the Greeks or in the Middle Ages. I think the rise of science inevitably diminishes the importance of philosophy.
But how would you then summarize the value of philosophy in the present world and in the future?
Well, I think it's very important in the present world. First, because, as I say, it keeps you realizing that there are very big and very important questions that science, at any rate at present, can't deal with, and that a scientific attitude by itself is not adequate. And the second thing it does is to make people a little more modest intellectually and aware that a great many things which have been thought certain turned out to be untrue, and that there's no shortcut to knowledge, and that the understanding of the world, which to my mind is the underlying purpose that every philosopher should have, that is a very long and difficult business about which we ought not to be dogmatic.